Well, today we will plan to end Daniel chapter 8, or finish it. Where we ended off last week was on verse 19, and I'll pick back up right there, and we'll repeat Daniel 8 verses 19 again, just to reiterate what this appointed time of the end is. But I'll read the verse. And he said, this is the angel Gabriel is talking to Daniel in this vision and explaining what this vision means to him. Look, I'm making known to you what shall happen in the latter time of the indignation. For at the appointed time, the end shall be. Now, this is falsely thought. The prevalent view, definitely of modern day, and I'm thinking even more in the times past, they're thinking this is the time of the end of the world. And I don't understand how they misconstrued that. It's almost like they are willfully trying to misunderstand this, because this vision is very explanatory that the things that are happening here are going to happen in the time of the Greek Empire. So, which would be in the neighborhood of about 300 years future to Daniel's time when Daniel's receiving this vision. So, this is not the time of the end is not the end of the world. This is the time of the end of this indignation. Well, what is that? Well, that is what this little horn, which historically now we know as Antiochus Epiphanes, was going to be bringing upon this punishment and a persecution bringing upon the Israelites. And he took away the daily sacrifices, which was explained here in verses 13 and 14. What is to come, even the holy people will be killed. And so he ended up killing the righteous people. And that's the indignation that is going to come to an end at the appointed time. Well, that was an appointed time by God. God knew when that was going to be. Now, it's symbolically described in verse 14 as it's going to be 2,300 days. Now, how that played out, Kaufman said he thinks that's just a symbolic number and can't be determined. But historically, he said that this siege on the Israelites and this ceasing of the daily sacrifices lasted for about 4 years, is what he had down from 168 to 165 B.C. was this period. And so that's the indignation and the time of the end. So when is this siege of Antiochus Epiphanes on us Israelites going to end? And then so we can resume the daily sacrifices. And so that's what this indignation is. And I'll say primarily, but I also got to thinking that this may have a dual meaning. And this indignation also is, when will the indignation of the Israelites against God and transgressing against God, when will that end? I think it's a dual thing, because that's what brought all of this on. And Malachi describes all of this, and we gave a brief summary last week about these transgressions, these sins that the Israelites were doing against God and not being obedient and following the law of Moses that God gave Moses. And so, as a result, they learned their lesson, because they were giving appropriate sacrifices when the Messiah shows up some 150, 200 years into the future of Antiochus Epiphanes' day and the Maccabees' day. So for then, the next 200 years or so, they were all straightened out on the appropriate sacrifices then they were putting a death knell into their messianic lineage. They were divorcing their Israelite spouses and then marrying pagan Gentiles. And so that they no longer were having a pure lineage. And so that had to also be stopped. And so I'm thinking this indignation that's going to end, a dual purpose, primarily of what Antiochus Epiphanes was doing against the Israelites, but also what caused the root cause of all of this was the indignation of the sin that the Israelites were performing against God. And so that's what this is. When will Antiochus's, this little horn siege against us Israelites, when will that end? So that's what we get that time frame. It is not future to our day. I looked on the internet and most everything that I found on just a brief search, Daniel 8 will be fulfilled sometime in the future to us, which is unbelievable. When this is very clear, all of this happened in the days of the Greek Empire, which was in the neighborhood of 200 BC. Any questions or comments on this? Okay, verse 20. The ram which you saw having the two horns, they are the kings of Media and Persia. And so that's very simple. Then verse 21, the male goat is the kingdom of Greece. The large horn that is between its eyes is the first king. And now we know historically that was Alexander the Great. And even the Israelites knew this because, and how we know that, what got recorded by Josephus. He recorded that the priest recognized this ahead of time. And whenever Alexander the Great was coming through Jerusalem or going to come through, they meet him outside of Jerusalem and they show him, hey, this is prophesied. This is you. You are this big, large horn. And then, of course, this male that's on this male goat that is the Greek Empire. And you are this large horn. You're the first king. And you are going to defeat Media and Persia, which he was, Alexander the Great was very hesitant. He had a big task ahead. The Medo-Persians were much larger in number than the Greeks were. And he was very nervous about these hard battles. And Josephus recorded that the priest or whoever was had brought this Daniel chapter 8 to him said, you have nothing to worry about. It's already written, is already being done. You are going to easily defeat them. And then he did. And then he just ran roughshod all the way to the east, all the way to the west side of India. And so there's no, shouldn't be any confusion of what we're talking about here. And so verse 22, as for the broken horn and the four that stood up in its place, four kingdoms shall arise out of that nation, but not with its power. And this is very simple to understand historically, and it should have been very simple also to have understood this before it happened. This large horn was going to be broken while it was still strong, so that is representing that Alexander the Great would die in his strength, and he was 33 years old when he died mysteriously of some sickness, some fever or something. And then in his place, the kingdom got divided into four kingdoms, and these four divisions were never as strong as the kingdom was under Alexander the Great's rule. And so that's very simple. It was not with its power under Alexander. The four divisions were much weaker. And so they were declining over time. But then, verse 23, and in the latter time of their kingdom, so it's they don't have a whole lot of time left, and this is, you know, in the 160 BC time frame. So it's just a few decades before the Roman Empire arises and takes over what is left of the much weakened Greek Empire. So in the latter time of the Greek Empire, when the transgressors have reached their fullness, this is talking about the Israelites and their sin against God. So, you know, from the time of Malachi, they were doing these sins that he's warning them about to stop, but they completely ignore him. And then they get no word from any other prophet. God does not speak through a prophet to them for the next 200 years or so, which ultimately is 400. They don't hear anything. Mankind doesn't hear anything until Matthew, until the turn of the millennia and with the Messiah. But they get worse and worse and worse, these Israelites, over this 200-year time frame from Malachi to Antiochus Epiphanes' time frame. And so God has had enough, and here comes the hammer is going to be dropped down on them. So a king shall arise, and he is described, this king is this little horn that's going to come out of one of these, a bigger horn from verse 9. One of these four divisions from verse 9, and then there's a little horn that's going to grow out of one of them. Well, this is that king from verse 23. So we know he's a king. It's not a kingdom. And I don't understand this either, but Adam Clark, he lived in the 17 and 1800s. Early 1800s is when I think he wrote his commentary. He thought that this king and this little horn was the Roman Empire that came out of Greece. And that doesn't even make any sense. Number one, the Romans were their own separate empire, and they did not arise out of Greece. They defeated the Greeks and overtook them. But anyway, so that's a fundamental misunderstanding that he had. And that's not the only one that he fundamentally misunderstood on this chapter alone. But anyway, fortunately, Kaufman understood this well. So this king, and now historically, and they should have even known at the time that this was Antiochus Epiphanes after he starts doing his evil deeds against them, the Israelites. So this king will have fierce features who understands sinister schemes. And he was evil workings. He completely violated the temple. He stopped the daily sacrifices, and then he started sacrificing pigs, and then he would smear this unclean pig animal blood all over the walls. And so these are parts of the sinister schemes. The other part of the sinister schemes is he would kill the righteous Israelites because he outlawed anything of the law of Moses. Anyone found doing anything of the law of Moses, they were killed. And so these are also in the explanation of these sinister schemes. Verse 24, his power shall be mighty, but not by his own power. He shall destroy fearfully and shall prosper and thrive. He shall destroy the mighty and also the holy people. So he's a powerful king, but not from his own power. That is telling us that this power is coming from God. God held him up much higher than he would have been and much stronger than he would have been otherwise. So, because God is sending him to punish the Israelites, to get them straightened out here some 150 to 200 years before the Messiah comes to earth. So that's what the purpose of all of this is. So he makes this wicked, evil man more powerful so he can punish and straighten out the Israelites, which happened. So he's going to prosper and thrive and destroy the mighty and also the holy people. That is a reference to even the righteous Israelites will get killed. And then I guess it was Josephus, but I read this last week, that came from Kaufman, but I think that the reference was from Josephus, that Antiochus Epiphanes murdered at least 100,000 righteous Jews. They were found to, anyone found to have the Old Testament scrolls or any part of the Old Testament scrolls, then they were killed. Anyone that was found to be observing or practicing any part of the Sabbath laws, they were instantly killed. And so 100,000 is what got recorded. And that is this reference of 24, that even the holy, the righteous people that are the remnant that's still doing right, they are even going to be killed in this with this evil man that has sinister schemes. Okay, any questions or comments on any of this so far? Okay, verse 25. Through his cunning, he shall cause deceit to prosper under his rule. And he shall exalt himself in his heart. He shall destroy many in their prosperity. He shall even rise against the prince of princes. So he's even going to rise against God. And this ultimately is going to be his downfall. And the next phrase describes that. But he shall be broken without human means. So here's another reference. God's going to break him. God will kill him off. And so there were two things. Verse 24, he's going to be mighty, but not by his own power. So God's going to make him mighty. And then God is going to kill him. He's going to break him, remove him. And now, historically, what got recorded that Kaufman mentioned here is, I'll read Kaufman's comments here because he explains it. First, verse 23, when the transgressors have reached their fullness, Kaufman said, this is a reference to the transgressions of Israel. It was the climax of such sins that led to God's permission for such an evil power as Antiochus Epiphanes to rise up and punish Israel. So, they didn't just start these transgressions against God. It had been going on for several hundred years, and it just got worse and worse and worse. And here it was, finally God had his fill. And the transgressors had reached their fullness, and God wasn't going to allow it to go any further. And he had to get them back on track for the Messiah to be coming in 150, 200 years in the future. Okay. Then this verse 24, as far as this little horn, this king that comes out of Greece, one of these four Greek divisions that now we know is Antiochus Epiphanes, Kaufman said, but not by his own power, Kaufman said, apparently God gave this evil man, Antiochus Epiphanes, the power to bring punishment upon Israel. Also, the intervention of God is behind the statement that he shall be broken without means. So, God's going to rise him up, and then God will end him. And then this verse 25, Kaufman said that Antiochus is said to have died of madness when he's broken without human means. The defeat of Antiochus by Judas Maccabeus might have been overcome if he had possessed the money to pay his troops. Not having the money, he attempted to plunder the pagan temple of Artemis at Elymais. He utterly failed, and that caused his death. Contemporary historians of those times viewed his death as caused by madness inflicted by a divine hand. So even the contemporary historians of those days saw that, or they felt like that Antiochus's death was inflicted by a divine hand. Now, I'm going to assume that these were pagan Greek historians, and so they would say the gods killed him, not the creator, and not having that concept. But they even saw that it was Greek gods, it was whoever, so that some divine being, as they saw it, ended his life and killed him. And so that historically came through that he was broken without human means. God ended him, made him go mad, and whatever the circumstances were, he said that utterly that ended up causing his death. He died by some kind of madness. Any questions or comments on this? Okay. Now verse 26. And the vision of the evenings and mornings, which was told, is true. And that is this 2,300 days, 2,300 evenings and mornings. That was going to be the duration that the temple, that they will not be doing the daily sacrifices from verse 13. And then when will that end? The 2,300 days represented the ending and ultimately cleansing and the restoration of the daily sacrifices. So the temple would be cleansed after these 2,300 days. And then the daily sacrifices would be restored. And so that's what that is referring to. Then, this is a very interesting statement that this kind of wording is mentioned at the end of Daniel, in Daniel chapter 12, but we're getting it also here in Daniel chapter 8. Therefore, seal up the vision, for it refers to many days in the future. Well, we know now that this was from Daniel's day, just 300 years. So it was from the 500 B.C. to the 200 B.C. time frame about. So in the neighborhood of 300 years is all that this was. And that was such a long time to God, even 300 years, that he says, seal this vision up, for the time is not at hand. Is the wording that gets in Daniel 12. And it's stated here, it refers to many days in the future. So see, the time is not at hand, which is a contrast to what we get in the book of Revelation that I will plan to cover somewhat briefly the verses. And we've covered this in the past, but since we're getting it here, again, we can see that whatever the book of Revelation was about, whatever those prophecies were, they came to pass much less than 300 years. Because 300 years is such a long time, you seal the vision up. In Revelation, John was told, keep the book open, for the time is at hand. And we'll read those passages. Then this last verse, verse 27, and I, Daniel, fainted and was sick for days. Afterward, I arose and went about the king's business. I was astonished by the vision, but no one understood it. So he told this vision to other people, and they did not understand it. They didn't know what to make of this. But at least we know through Josephus, they picked up and understood that the Greek Empire was going to be to defeat the Medo-Persians. And then they should have picked up, and that I don't know that they ever did, that due to their sin, they were going to be punished by God through one of these kings of the Greek Empire. Any questions or comments on this?